This is the Misdirected Mark Podcast, a podcast about gaming, game mastering, and entertaining you, our listeners. We are explicit, you have been warned, and I'd like to thank Mike Willer for letting us use his music on our show. Now let's pick up those mics and get on with this thing.
All righty. So, the grav tank carrying the Empress's personal guard crashes from the sky onto the repurposed assault walker used by the Darkstone gang.
Oh, good shot, Mokjes.
Parson, they don't fly so well with only one thruster.
The collision causes both vehicles to just explode, right? Like just like a Bruckheimer explosion, scattering flaming debris like in every direction.
I believe you were looking for Michael Bay.
Yes. I'll take a Bruckheimer.
Like base explosion. Bruckheimer.
Yeah.
So I toss the MacGuffin orb to Mokjes and scoop up Captain Tellus and pull her to safety. She's going to be mad about all of this. I'm really going to have some splaining to do.
She's going to be mad about a lot of things. Look, she's still out from the stun grenade, so you don't have any problem like putting her over your shoulder. But like all around you like are the sounds of the battle as the Empress's Storm Guard get into the firefight against the mercenaries from the Darkstone gang, right? Like, it's going on everywhere.
See, now aren't you glad we sold Narsa on those plans?
Sold them? We traded him for our lives, Mokjes. We were supposed to make a profit, but then the guard found out about the heist, and the only way out was to make a deal with your ex. Who knew Narsa would sell the plans to the Darkstone gang?
I mean, she had to make a profit somehow.
And I should remember that she had targeted the Darkstone. That's one of the reasons you aren't together right now. It was sometimes too much. Anyway, I'm going to look for a way out of this mess.
All right, give me a perception roll.
Success and complication.
Cool. All right, so you look for an escape route, but suddenly you see an access door near one of the buildings open up, revealing a staircase going down. And as you get closer, you can see Narsan holding the portal for you. Come on, didn't think I was going to leave you to die. Besides, I still have to pay you back for the prom.
Aw, she does care.
We follow her down the stairs.
Follow Narsan for several blocks underground, hearing the sounds of combat overhead, right? Like, that's just not stopping the entire time that you're heading down the stairs. And even as you head deeper into the Undercity, it sounds like the entire neighborhood is, like, a full-on, like, block war now.
Jeez, what did we start this time?
So after several blocks, you pass through a large doorway into an elaborate underground chamber. Video screens adorn every wall. You can see security footage of like fighting from like multiple angles. Flaming wreckage from the Empress's war machine. The starport appears to be engulfed in fire. And part of the Imperial Bank appears to have crumbled. Right? Several Galathi warriors stand at attention near the center of the room.
Crap. Narsan, what'd you get us into?
She gives you an apologetic smile and then heads into the room. And as you enter the chamber, you see a large swivel chair with its back to you, the occupant apparently staring at the screens. And a half dozen of those shock troops raise their polar staves and point them in your direction. Parson Val, in your arms, Captain Tellus, is just beginning to wake up. Her eyes open as the chair turns, revealing the person you've only seen in shadows before, Sarham Brush, the Shadow Master.
I set Tellus down carefully. I didn't come this far to drop her.
The Shadow Master smiles. Thank you for supplying my enemies with a reason to fight one another. It took a lot to keep you two on planet, all of the attacks, misdirected instructions, and leaked information, but it is all paid out as well. We get to watch the Empress and the Darkstone gang wipe each other out. By day's end, everything in the Imperial Bank will have been looted as well. Most importantly, however, I now have the MacGuffin Orb, and nobody is the wiser. So please, hand it over.
This whole thing was just a ruse. And with that, welcome to the 470th episode of the Misdirected Mark Podcast. Tonight we continue our discussion on villain types by examining the Puppet Master, and how to use them in your campaigns. Along the way, we'll take suggestions and examples from the chat room for life, before jumping into the after show. But first, my name is Jerry.
My name is Phil.
And I am Old Man Logan. Ho ho, we got a show, and we got a new audio configuration, and all the hosts can hear the bumpers now.
Yay! Thank you, Schmitty.
Thanks, Schmitty. All right, but before we can go into the house misdirected, we got to do a temperature check. COVID protocols. Phil, how you feeling?
I am physically and mentally feeling much better than last week. With an extra week since the election, I have recovered quite a bit. I was unaware that my recovery would involve me singing Motley Crue's Home Sweet Home at the top of my lungs while scrubbing a toilet this weekend.
Ain't but, nothing you know, wrong with that.
You find your joy where you find it.
Yep.
I will quickly tip my hat to our good friend Sean Gilgore, who shared with me his high school playlist on YouTube Music, which Sean nice. And I graduated together. So and we're friends in high school. So much of his high school list is my high school list. So I was listening to it all weekend, was cleaning bathrooms and stuff. But yes, I was rocking out full tilt to Motley Crue while scrubbing toilets. So whatever. But I do feel better. I'm still a little stressed, but I am on the cusp of going on vacation. So I just have to get a couple more days in. My friend Bob, how are you?
I am feeling good mentally and physically. It's been a good day. It's been a good day. I had a couple of naps. I was tired this morning. I was tired all day yesterday. I got a couple of naps, and I've had 4 cups of coffee total today already.
Ooh. You on the night
train. Two of them in the last 45 minutes. But again, tonight's watch party, so I got to be awake for the watch party. The stress has been much greatly reduced. I got some news from work on Friday, and it's all been kind of solidified today that I am basically changing teams again at work and focusing on one project rather than being split in 2 different directions. So that kind of eased a lot of the work stress issues, which weren't really super bad, but you know, every little bit helps. So yeah, I'm feeling good and ready to do a show. Jerry, how you doing?
Pretty good. I'm about ready to start. I got one more day at work, then I'm off for a week and a half. This is the week my wife goes in for her surgery, so I'll be off taking care of her for a week and a half, and it should be fairly relaxing. So it's gonna be nice to spend some time at home together. So I'm looking forward to that.
Cool.
Been good.
I hope all of that goes very smoothly.
I expect it will. I mean, it's the best team in Buffalo, and this is
hands. It is indeed.
And this is very simple procedure, and they do it all the time. So I'm expecting it to go very well. So
happy thoughts and positive vibes heading your way.
Thank you.
Yeah. And all right. Of course, you'll keep us up to date.
Of course. Yeah. Of course.
I will say this just in general. While I think this is happening nationwide in our own area, our COVID numbers are rising.
Yes.
I have heard, so we're already in a yellow. I have heard that the governor is going to announce tomorrow sections of Western New York that are going to move into orange and red, which has further lockdown restrictions in terms of businesses and things like that. Mm-hmm. Orange and red pretty much mean virtual school only for kids. My kids are already in virtual school, so dodging the bullet on that. But it's getting less good. And I think we New Yorkers are a little spoiled because, like, I'm looking at the numbers and, like, our, like, local numbers are, like, in the 5-6% range. And that's, like, not terrible compared to other states would have much higher.
Yeah.
Yeah. But for Christ's sake, people, stay the hell home and wear your masks.
Yes, please.
That's all I'm going to say. I'm so sick of
I'm with you, right? Like, I'm frustrated. I saw a thing on TikTok the other day, and I thought it was really good. And it was like, look, if your life is, you know, if your life's going to be greatly impacted, if your social life's going to be greatly impacted by this coming lockdown, you're the reason we're having this lockdown.
Yep, that's exactly it.
Like, the rest of us just been home.
All right.
Anyway, I don't want to get all.
Yeah. Now that we've preached a little.
We'll leave
bit.
It there. We'll leave it there on the floor.
So let's jump into one good thing.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah. One good thing is always fun. So I personally have been fighting the urge to buy more Lego lately. my standard retail therapy has been, you know, a little bit here and a little bit there, but
I'm sure Jerry can talk you out of it.
Oh, I'm sure Jerry can be like, just buy it, Bob. No, they've got First of all, I get the weekly emails from the VIP program, so I get to see some stuff from there. And for whatever reason, they sent me a catalog in the mail, and I'm like, a hard copy catalog? Like, I haven't gotten a hard copy catalog from anybody in like 20 years.
You will get those about three times a year.
Yeah, but I looked at it and I'm like, oh man, there's some nice stuff in there. They've got a really snazzy looking Ecto-1 from the new Ghostbusters movie that's going to be coming out. And it's like fully articulated doors and stuff, and all like all this. It's a really slick looking piece. Unfortunately, it's not minifigure like scale. I don't think there's no figs with it, but it's the vehicle and it looks really cool. They've got another what the hell was it? There's another Avengers Tower set that I think has been around for a while that just came back into stock, and I'm like, oh, there's some cool stuff. But I'm like, I don't need to spend the money right now. But it is, Christmas is coming. So
I did pick up the Sesame Street set last time I had to go to the mall to pick up some stuff. So nice. I haven't built that one yet. But
I was telling Jerry the other day that what they need to do is they need to make a big set like they did with Mos Eisley Cantina. Make a big set of the station from Star Wars Resistance, the Colossus. It's this ocean station that stands on these four pillars, and it's got like all this stuff going on. And I'm like, that would be really cool, but less probably, less well known than some of the other stuff, because I don't know how many people are really into Resistance, but anyhow, that's my one thing.
When we can finally get away from COVID, you'll have to come over some night. We'll have to sit down and order pizza and put together the Death Star playset. It's gonna take like 6 to 8 hours, but we can do it over a couple of nights.
We could be like Peter and Ned, put together the Death Star.
That's right. Cool.
All right, what's your one thing, Jer?
Wait, that's what? Cool, because you're the IT guy, so that means you can be my guy in the chair.
Yes, I'll be your guy in the chair. You can be Spider-Man, Jerry. I'll let you.
Awesome.
It's my groove, but true. I'll let you do it.
But again, of course, Bob doesn't want to be Spider-Man anyway, right? Anything but spiders. So.
No, see, that's the weird thing. I am arachnophobic to the nth degree, and yet Spider-Man's my favorite character. Since
would you allow a spider to bite you to gain Spider-Man's powers?
Fuck to the no.
There you go.
Oh, man.
Dude, I would let a spider bite me just to get the Fabulous Frogman's powers. All right. For me, it's Dungeons 3. I'm a big fan of the old Dungeon Keeper video games. And I don't play a lot of video games. I don't have Steam. I don't have any of that stuff. And last week, out of the blue, Chris is like, hey, there's this game called Dungeons that's supposed to be similar to the game you used to play, and it's for free on Epic. And so I downloaded it, and it is literally just an updated version of Dungeon Keeper 3 with better missions, more stuff to do. They even, in the game, make fun of the fact they're ripping off Dungeon Keeper 3. Dungeon Keeper. They keep saying things like, you're a keeper in a dungeon. We can't use those two words together, though, or else we'll be sued, things like that.
You're a keeper, Harry.
It's a lot of fun. The narrator is horribly annoying in a bad way. The cutscenes then aren't good, but the game itself is fine. You can skip the cutscenes. So, but it's a lot of fun. It's been just something to kind of play when I want to kind of veg out and, beat up on dwarves. So, video game dwarves and fantasy dwarves, not real life dwarves. I have great respect for
those. Yeah, Jerry, we were with you.
Just
in case anybody else didn't catch it,
Bob only had that look on his face because he plays dwarves all the time.
Oh, I can't stand dwarves. That's okay. But video games is a lot of fun, so it's cool. It's if you like Dungeon Keeper or like games where you basically build a dungeon and harass minions and then go out and lay havoc to the forces of annoyingly goodness, who aren't all that good, then Dungeons is a fun game. So anyway,
cool.
How about you, Phil? Did you do anything interesting this week?
This weekend, Cyberpunk Red dropped. True to their word, Artelsorium was like, it's coming out on Saturday. So at 1 o'clock in the morning, I checked drive through and I was like, oh, yes, it is. Yep. So I promptly bought it in the middle of the night. I've been reading it. I've been reading it all week, making my way through it. It's a big book. It's a big book for like 459 pages big. But it is it very much reminds me of the original game. I don't think it is a sweeping overhaul of the mechanics, but more of a fine tuning of the mechanics. I did hear something, Jer, that I think will make you feel better. I have not seen it in practice yet, but I heard that they have reduced the importance of reflex as a stat, like, because I know from the original game, like, reflex was where the money was, like, just, so I
love Cyberpunk. I love that game. I played the hell out of it.
I'm looking forward to. I saw a couple places where I was like, oh, if I was going to house rule some stuff, I might put some stuff in here. But mechanically, it's still the same skill stat D10. I don't have a huge problem with that. That's not a deal breaker for me. I think the next chapter is Friday Night Firefight, so I'll find out what the combat system looks like.
Was our trail story in the first game to do skill plus stat plus die?
It's hard to say. It's I mean, for me, it's one that I clearly remember because Cyberpunk 2013 was 1989. And I remember my local game store had a poster for it up on the wall, and I pre-ordered my box set because I was such a giant Cyberpunk nerd at the time. And then we played that game all, like, that was my junior year of high school. We played that game all through my junior and senior year of high school. I have a very fond recollection of one of my players standing in a nightclub on top of a table unloading an FN FAL assault rifle into the mob boss.
As you do. I mean, you know.
I don't remember anything that led up to it, but it had reached a point where... It had reached that point where the players were like, the big bad has to die now. And so somehow they got into the club and they got that gun in there, and the solo just jumped up on the table where the guy was like lifting his drink off the table and emptied the whole clip into him. It's brutal, man. Anyway, I'm reading it. I really like the layout's great. The artwork is gorgeous for this game. Like, the artwork is absolutely gorgeous. The layout's good. I don't think the layout is spectacular, but what I really like is it's super clean. They made some very conscious choices. There's an article on their website that made some very conscious choices about some of the graphic designs that they chose, the font uses, the fact that they used a slightly larger font, and they left white space in a lot of places, so it's a pretty easy to read. In fact, they go back and forth between two column and one column. So sometimes they just have two column text, and sometimes in that 8.5 11 by 11 book, they just go out one column. Like, if they've got tables and stuff, they'll just one column the page. I'm finding it pretty easy, like easy on the eyes to read, which is interesting because we're going to talk about that when we get to the announcement about easy on the eyes in just a moment. Because I see the warden is in the in the chat room, so we'll get to that. Bob, I'll just tip you off before I do the announcements. If you'll pull up the
already up.
Starter page, thank you.
Ooh, all right, I got this shit wired now.
Yeah, yeah. Where geez. I just drop a couple of cups of coffee in him. He's on the game. All right, let's get into announcements. I'm gonna do this slowly. We'll back this up with some social media and some show notes as well, but I'm going to go through the holiday hiatus schedule. So right now it is the 17th of November and we are recording this live. This episode drops a week after it's recorded. So it will drop on November 24th, which is the Tuesday before American Thanksgiving. Okay. So the Tuesday before American Thanksgiving, this show drops. We are then going on hiatus for 5 weeks. We do this every year, take 5 weeks off through the holidays to relax and unwind and kind of refresh ourselves after doing the show weekly all year. We return on Tuesday, December 29th. That show will record live on the 29th and will drop on January 5th. So if you are only listening to the show via podcast feed, this technically is our last show for the year. You will hear your next show January 5th, 2021. If you are watching us live, then this show is the beginning of our 5 week hiatus. We will be back on the 29th of December. We will not be doing a New Year's episode this year. I don't think 2020 gets deserves any sort of recollection, recap, or anything.
Yeah.
I think that we'll just record on the 29th and drink.
Yeah, drinking large quantities of whiskey on the New Year's Eve instead of recording.
I do not feel any need whatsoever to recap this year. So we'll just do a normal show on the 29th, and then we will just resume doing normal shows. So that is the holiday hiatus schedule.
Yep.
Just keep that in mind. We will put things on the feed to remind you that we're coming back.
Yep.
So don't take us out of your podcatcher. Leave us in the podcatcher. And a week before, I will record a little 5-minute something and ask Rob to drop it into the feed just to remind people that we're coming back.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That kind of thing. Okay. Did all that make sense to you guys? Like, yes. Do you guys know when not to show up?
Yeah. I know when I'm not showing up. I don't know about you.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Next thing, DS9 watch party. We're in week 13, going strong, right? We've got 3 more months of this to go. The watch parties will continue on Tuesday evenings at their normal time, which is 11:30 Eastern, all through the hiatus.
Yep.
So just because you are not hearing us on the show or hearing us live, like because the show's not live, we will still be doing the watch party. I will put the link in all the same places. I will put it in Slack. I will put it on the forums. So don't waver in that. Like,
yep.
We're into season 5. Like, we're in the money now. Like, stay with us.
A lot of good stuff coming.
A lot of good stuff, including tonight's first episode.
Yep.
No spoilers. Yep. Okay. That is the watch party. Next up, one of our beloved members of our Slack family, Todd Crapper, is got a new Kickstarter called Vision Layers, creating accessible updates for tabletop RPGs. I think this is fantastic.
Yep.
It is all about reformatting PDFs of indie games and small press games to make them more accessible by using PDF layers. So I think this is...
It's a really cool project.
It's really cool. The tiers are bundles of games. So as the Kickstarter increases, and it's already doing great, right? Mm-hmm. I think Todd's off to a good run.
Yep.
Bob, do you have it open?
I do. It is up on
the... Can you tell us what games are being upgraded right now?
Oh. We have got... you're killing me. The first one out of the gate is Time Watch from Pellegrin Press. And then next up from that is Capers from Nerdburger Games.
Nice.
Which is Superpowered Gangsters in the Roaring Twenties.
Yeah, who's we've featured on the show. Yep.
Yep. Next up, not too far from now, will be Ninja Crusade Second Edition from Aloy LaSanta. Man, I almost fumbled on that. Hardest Working Man in Games from Third Eye Games. After that is Nefertiti Overdrive from Swords Edge Publishing, which is crazy wirefu action set in ancient Egypt. Not really fond of that description. That's theirs, not mine. And then there's
I know what Bob's talking about.
Oh. Yeah. After that is Never Going Home from Wet Ink Games, which is a party-focused role-playing game set in horror-haunted trenches during the First World War.
That sounds terrifying.
Ooh. Yeah. And then there's more stuff to be revealed as we hit larger quantities of support. But
I've seen a more complete list of that in other places, so I won't spoil it, but there are some really good games in there.
I believe there's a list in the Slack room.
I'm interested in terms of reading accessibility, if Todd's going to get rid of Pellegrin's shitty 3-column layout, is that it? Like, that would be my first step in fixing the accessibility.
I don't think that's part of the plan with the layering, but I could be wrong.
You know, unravel that you want to unravel that inhuman 3-column format.
That's just painful.
Man, I have a lot of love for Pellegrin. I don't have a lot of love for that layout.
Yeah.
And they love it.
They do.
It is their signature. I think that's their, I think that's their plan for how to not sell PDFs, is like to force everybody into books that the three column PDF is like impossible to read.
Todd says it's up to them, but he's going to try. Oh, that's good.
I mean, if you could unravel that three column, even just a two column, but you know, it'd be pretty amazing. Anyway, this is, It's cool. It's cool Kickstarter. It's got a lot of cool games in there. And I, not only is it the cool games, but honestly, I think what I really like about this is Todd's bringing to light something that, we as publishers should all start, looking at, which is, how to do this for our own PDFs as well.
Exactly. The, there's going to be a website going up with tips and tutorials, I guess, on how to do layering and do the things that he's going to be doing so that people can use that knowledge going forward. So that's, I think that's awesome. Anything that, that helps accessibility is a good thing.
Also, you could just hire Todd. That would be the other thing people could do is if you have a Kickstarter and you need, you know, somebody to make sure that your PDF is, accessible, visually, you could hire Todd. Like you should do that. Todd's layouts are deft to begin with.
Oh yeah.
He's got some really, he's done some really sweet layouts and, he would definitely, he would be definitely worth your money, to hire Todd.
Absolutely.
To do some layout. All right. Good stuff.
All right.
Good stuff. Good luck, Todd. Layers.
Cool.
All right. Are we ready to roll on?
You know what time it is?
Oh, let me, allow me
time for Phil to take a sip of beverage.
I haven't heard this in forever, so.
I know. This is glorious. All right.
Yeah, I'm ready. Workshop, workshop, it's the puppet master. He pulls all the strings, he hides in the shadow, he makes everything happen. Through his machinations and is through his network, it is the puppet master.
Don't suck.
Well, now I've pretty much given up the whole intro to the segment.
All right. Oh, makes me happy to hear that again.
Yep.
For our, penultimate show of the year, we're going to look at another form of opposition. As we have for the last couple of weeks. Tonight, we're going to look at the Puppet Master. We're going to look at what they are, we're going to look at what makes them tick, and we're going to look at how to get the most out of them in your game.
And of course, as we always do, Phil, can you set us up with some definitions after this glorious bumper?
Behold! You are in the presence of Definition Panda.
Yes.
I love having bumpers that everybody can hear.
I'm happy to help. Let's start with the most important definition, which is that of the puppet master. A person, group, or country that covertly controls another. Okay, so let me tease out a couple words here, the important pieces, which is the first one is covert, right? So not openly acknowledged or displayed, right? Secret. The puppet master does these things covertly. The other one, which is just personally a favorite word of mine, is control. The power to influence or direct people's behavior or course of events, right? So the puppet master is someone who secretly controls others.
Yep.
Okay, I'm going to tack on two more terms into the definitions for tonight. The first one is the thrall, right? Thrall, a servant or captive. And the other word we're going to use tonight is network, an informally interconnected group or association of persons. I don't necessarily think that one needed explanation, but just to be clear.
Thrall also was a terrible idea in Magic the Gathering, and we'll leave it at that.
Yes, not as bad as the ATOG, but thralls were pretty bad. Okay, so what this means is that the puppet master is someone or something that secretly controls one or more people.
Yep. All right.
And this is important, right? So this is important because if you control someone and it's not secret, that's just a leader, right? Like that's just either like somebody charismatic or somebody who's, you know, using leadership or something like that, right? The puppet master does this all in secret, right? So in RPGs, the puppet master is often the behind-the-scenes form of opposition who is orchestrating events and attacks through the use of their thralls.
And we're going to give a couple of examples. Some of the best ones, for those of you who've seen Young Justice, Darkseid, who sat and manipulated both the heroes and the light in the background.
Yes, Bob? Absolutely. And then I accidentally scrolled. The next example is Loki from Marvel Comics, specifically the Axe of Vengeance storyline, where Loki tricked the villains into attacking each other's heroes so that instead of the standard villain-hero combinations, they were mixing it up and fighting different heroes than they normally would.
And lastly, Moriarty in Sherlock, Elementary, and just whatever the variation on the Sherlock Holmes series. This is a person who has plans upon plans that reveal themselves slowly, and they often trick Sherlock and Watson into doing their bidding along the way before they're revealed. So
absolutely. So now that we know what the Puppet Master is, Jerry, let's take a deeper look at what makes them tick.
All right. The Puppet Master is all about their ability to do things through other people. For the rest of the segment, we're going to refer to the Puppet Master in the singular, but the Puppet Master could just as easily be a group. But here are some things that make the Puppet Master who they are.
Right. So the Puppet Master has the ability to control others. The Puppet Master has some sort of ability to get people to do what they want. This could be a superpower. It could be magic. It could be psionics. Or it could be mundane, right? This could be somebody who is using bribery or extortion, taking people hostage, those kinds of things. If it's cyberpunk, they're, you know, maybe they're implanting cortical bombs into people, right? Mm-hmm. And getting them to do their bidding. But the important part is they have some way to get people to do things they normally wouldn't want to do.
Right. Second thing is they have a way to hide. The Puppet Master is often someone who remains in the shadows. They're typically not someone who's well-known or public. They may even be quite ordinary and unassuming. And they can be powerful, but use their power and wealth to remain hidden.
The Puppet Master has a network of thralls. So a Puppet Master is nothing without thralls to do what they need. Mm-hmm. So often a Puppet Master will have a collection of them with different skills, abilities, and uses. And that collection of thralls is their network of resources that they use to get things done. Mm-hmm. And the thralls may know each other or may have no idea about each other, depending on kind of how the Puppet Master operates. Mm-hmm.
Next, the Puppet Master is always going to have a motivation. Like any other kind of opposition, they have to have a motivation or drive. They could be controlling people for selfish reasons, or to solidify their power, or their wealth. They could be defending something, like an ideal or a secret. Or they could just be a sadist who enjoys controlling people for their own pleasure.
That one, to me, is what's-his-face from Jessica Jones.
Oh, yeah.
Purple Man, right?
The Purple Man's...
Kilgrave.
Right, Purple Man's straight-up sadist.
Yep.
Right, like... He's just in it. He's just in it because he can do it.
Yep.
As opposed to some of the other ones. Okay. The Puppet Master also has an objective. Their motivation is going to shape what their objective is. And they could have a short term objective or a long term objective or both. Right. They could have something that they're working on right now as opposed to something in the future. Like they may have created a web of money laundering to amass great wealth. They may have infiltrated all levels of government to keep the world ignorant of arcane activities, right? These are their general objectives. This is why you're going to run into them as, you know, like in your game.
And you have to understand that in most cases, the Puppet Master is evil. And they're evil because they exert their control almost always in a non-consensual way over others to gain things they want. No matter what their motivation or objective, they're likely non-consensually controlling someone. And this is what makes them evil. So, as a matter of safety, if you have anyone in your group who has issues with non-consensual consent, you need to make sure your safety tools have been addressed with the group before you put a Puppet Master into your game.
I don't think I wrote that as clearly as I should have. Non-consensual consent, but I think we all get what we're saying there, right? Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's an excellent point.
If you have issues with non-consensuality or lack of consent,
yep.
Mm-hmm.
Then yeah,
make sure you make it clear with everybody at the table. You don't want to surprise somebody and have them get all uncomfortable and...
Right. I mean, there's a reason why, I mean, Jessica Jones is like, you know, like, I mean, that first season of Jessica Jones is like really
hard.
Like, I mean, the Purple Man is like terrifying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that was triggery as hell for a lot of people.
Yes, right? So I guess our point to this was you might want to be careful and not surprise anyone with this. Like, we've talked about the conspiracy and we've talked about the mastermind, and in terms of safety, like, they don't really, I mean, depending on what they're doing, it could cause safety issues, but the puppet master could very well be a triggering kind of character for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So, Phil, what is the appeal of the puppet master?
Yeah, right. I think the appeal of the puppet master is twofold. Firstly, I think it has roots in our desire, in our own personal desires for control and power.
There are some people out there who find the kind of power appealing. They like the ability to control people. And I think it's going to indulge certain fantasies of having more control over the world than we might likely have. And so there are going to be villains who are going to have that taken to the nth degree.
Yeah. But I think that what makes puppet masters more appealing is when their control is disrupted.
Yep. A puppet master who is totally control their powers is boring and is a really terrible concept. What we get excited about is when someone breaks the control or exposes the puppet master and then takes them down. We fear that kind of power, and when it's destroyed, it makes us feel a lot better.
Yeah. I mean, I know personally, right? Like, the end of season one of
Jessica Jones.
Jessica Jones, right? Like, that scene, like, I'm biting my nails, right? Because, like, you don't know which way it's going to go. And then when it finally goes, you're like, right? Like, just like a huge sigh of relief. Because it's terrifying, because up to that point, it doesn't look like there's anything that will stop him, right? Like, he, like, just wades through people and just treats them like, you know, objects, right? It's, okay. So while our goal with all opposition is to defeat it, with the puppet master, I would say this is even more important. You are creating a puppet master to eventually fail, right? Yeah. One whose powers are not absolute. And we're going to get into that later in the segment, right? We're going to unpack that a little more depth.
Yes. But first, we need to talk about the Puppet Master's network, as this will be a big part of who and what the Puppet Master is. What do you got, Jerry?
Well, the network is going to be one of the big parts that the players are going to interact with on a regular basis. As interesting as it is, their network can be even more interesting. Who the Puppet Master has as their thralls informs us a lot about what they can and cannot do. Each thrall controlled comes with anything that they are able to control. If the puppet master controls a banking executive, then the puppet master has access to the finances. If they control a police officer, they have control weapons, the ability to arrest, and access to a jail. So those thralls become important.
Yeah. So some networks are going to be collections of different thralls from all sorts of professions and abilities, right? This is a heterogeneous network. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's often purpose built. Right. The puppet master will basically select thralls based on what they need. Right. So each thrall is going to serve some purpose to kind of build the puppet master's ultimate organization. Right. Yep. So you you thrall a banker so that you can keep your wealth. You can keep your wealth growing. You thrall a police officer because you want protection and maybe some muscle and things like that.
Now, in addition to such a wide variety, a network could also just be homogeneous. The puppet master picks over one type of person or a single organization. This is going to reduce the variety of things the puppet master can do, but it's going to increase the intensity because they're going to be focused on what they're doing. Controlling one police officer lets you use the resources of a single office. Controlling the entire police force allows you to bring to bear multiple officers, SWAT, weapons teams, detectives, cybercrime, etc., etc. And they're going to be able to basically influence that entire side of the law enforcement community.
Yeah. Now, these are not absolutes, right? So, you know, we're talking about them in kind of general, you know, kind of sweeping things, right? A heterogeneous network, a homogeneous network. Your puppet master could have some blend of this, right? So they could be mostly homogeneous, but also then pick up a few extra thralls to get like a couple things done, right? So, you know, maybe they've taken over, you know, completely taken over a whole street gang. But they also pick up like an officer or two in a particular neighborhood. This way, when the gang is committing crimes, you know, the officers that that the puppet master has under their control helps kind of cover all that up.
Yep.
And this is going to be important because the puppet master is going to be characterized by their network. Take some time to think about what you want that network to be and what kinds of things it can do for the puppet master before you put it into place.
Absolutely. So let's now look at how to make the Puppet Master and their network into a formidable foe. What do you think, Phil?
Right. I think a lot about this. The Puppet Master is a great form of opposition, right? And like most forms of opposition, they work in almost every scale, right? They'll work in terms of a story, they'll work in terms of an arc, or they'll work as a, you know, as the bad guy for a whole campaign. The Puppet Master as a form of opposition has kind of its own plot structure.
Mm-hmm. First of all, you need to have the players discover the evidence of some sort of influence. At some point in the story, the player is going to find someone who's done something, and it becomes clear that someone else made them do it. And this is going to end up revealing the existence of the Puppet Master and start the players on their trail. For example, a train conductor crashes a commuter train, and when their body's examined, there's a strange aura around it, like a sign of magic or some sort of cybernetics.
Yeah. So then next, they're going to encounter another thrall. Often the Puppet Master is going to try to protect their network. So if someone is poking around it, they may send another thrall to throw the players off the track or attack the players, right? It can be either or. It could just be to lead them in the wrong direction or actually to try to, like, you know, physically stop them. And this creates an opportunity for the group to confirm the existence of the Puppet Master, as well as picking up some clues on how to find them later in this plot structure. Right. Yeah. So while investigating the body of the train conductor, a police officer comes over and intimidates the players. But the mage of the party notices that they have the same aura as mm-hmm. the train conductor.
Now, once you've gotten that far, next you have to reveal part or all of the network. The characters are going to begin to expose the network in part or in whole, bit by bit. And in doing so, it's going to reveal the Puppet Master behind it. For example, while tracing this magical aura, the group finds a law firm where every partner is radiating the aura, and then looking at their client list, they find a woman named Abigail Drop.
Right, and then finally, as you come to the kind of the end of the story structure, you have to go and confront the Puppet Master. Mm-hmm. So now the players now know where the Puppet Master is. They will go and confront them in order to end their control. Right. So after doing more research, the characters find the ancestral home of Abigail Droth. And they arm up with wards and dynamite because, it's Cthulhu-esque and bring dynamite and head out to confront her.
All right. There's a couple of things, though, that can happen at different times during the arc. These are going to be drop-in scenes to put in where they fit.
Yeah. So the first one I mentioned before, right, you can the network could send somebody to attack the players. Mm-hmm. This is the Puppet Master taking direct action against the player characters using thralls from the network, right? So this is where if you have muscle in your network, this is where you send your, police officers, your street thugs, your solo, whatever, to try to eliminate the players. And this often helps the, one, it's a good combat scene, right? So you get a little something out of it for that. But also this will often help confirm that the players are on the right trail, right? If they weren't being attacked, then they wouldn't be on the trail. Like, it often helps solidify things for the players.
All right. The second thing that's going to happen is the Puppet Masters are going to attempt to control or subvert the characters. This often doesn't happen early in the arc, but later as the players get closer and closer. Puppet Masters are going to use their power on the character, attempting to stop the party from getting closer, or even trying to defeat them. And this is going to get into the tricky area of character autonomy, something we're going to address again in a few minutes.
Yeah. So earlier in the segment, we talked about how the Puppet Master cannot be all powerful. Mm-hmm. In order for them to be able to be defeated, they have to have limits. And here are some ways that you can take those limits into consideration.
Okay, first of all, their ability to take someone over should not be absolute. This could be mechanical, like a save or a roll to resist, but it's highly important when we're talking about the PCs themselves.
Yeah, right? I mean, at some point when the Puppet Master confronts the PCs, the Puppet Master may try to take one over. And if that power was absolute, like you've just, you're you're getting into that really squicky character autonomy part.
Yep.
The Puppet Master's ability to control may not be perfect. So while they're able to get people to do something, what they can get them to do is limited. Like perhaps they can get them to do something that's normal for that person. Like you can get the banker to forge some bank records, but you can't get the banker to beat someone with a lead pipe to death.
Yeah.
Right. So maybe the puppet master's ability isn't so absolute.
Exactly. All right. And next, the thralls are going to sometimes fail at their tasks. They're not perfect. When they do things with a puppet master, they might fail or be incomplete.
Yeah. I mean, they just, you know, they're going to have stats. Mm-hmm. They could just be outsmarted, defeated, or whatever by the players. Mm-hmm. For the thrall, there may be a way to escape the control of the puppet master, right? So perhaps the thrall perhaps the puppet master has to, exert their control on the thrall on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it fades away, right? Or it goes away if they're not in the presence of the puppet master. I think that's the purple man, right? Like, once he leaves an area. Mm-mm. No, it stays?
No. Oh, no. That's how he got that one girl. Remember, he told her, keep jumping till I come back, and she almost jumped herself to death?
Right, never mind.
Yeah, no, he was very bad. Very, very bad.
Very bad.
Yes.
Right, so perhaps when the thrall is too far from the puppet master, there's a bonuses to save or an additional save for them not to do what the puppet master says.
And lastly, their influence can be interrupted. This could be a thing or a power or something that can break the control. For example, there's an elixir that can break the control of the thrall, or there's a way to interrupt the electrical control if it's cybernetic, or anything along that line. So,
right. The important part of all of these ideas is that you've got to design your puppet master with one or more of these weaknesses, right? Mm-hmm. So if you don't, they're going to be basically unstoppable.
Exactly.
So you want to up front, as you're kind of planning out your puppet master, is think about the nature of their power, how it works, and then what, and then assign it some of these limitations. And then that should be a thing that the players can then discover mm-hmm. as part of that story arc, right? They should come to learn, like, how does this spell work? And then how can we interrupt it, or how can we protect ourselves from it? Those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. That's all part of this arc for defeating the puppet master.
All right, that's a lot of good advice. Can you use them as an ally, Jerry?
Oh, yeah. It's possible, but it's just not too common. As an ally, the puppet master is going to work with the PCs for some sort of goal. They may use their network to work towards that goal, but under no circumstances are the characters going to be thralls of the puppet master themselves.
Yeah.
Okay. In case you were not listening, under no circumstances are the characters thralls of the puppet master. This is just a bad idea for a campaign setup.
Yeah.
Do not do this.
Nope.
Yeah, bad idea.
No, the whole point is that they're an ally. And as an ally, they can be someone who provides intelligence and resources for the players through their network. They could have thralls in the police department providing information. They could have a thrall who's a pilot who flies the characters to their mission site. But there's somebody who... the thralls are all going to be NPCs, not the player characters themselves.
Yeah, I mean, if you're lucky, most players would just rebel at the pitch for this game, right? Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
There's this puppet master that's part of your organization who controls all of you guys and tells you what to do. Like, your players should just be like,
no,
fuck you, Phil. Yeah. We're not playing in your sick fantasy game. Like,
yeah.
So no.
I think if you think about the movie The Shadow, all of his attendees were all sort of thralls of his. So the players would be working alongside somebody like that would be the closest you'd come to that. But you wouldn't want to make the player characters any of his actual thralls. They'd want to be allies of his.
Yeah, I mean, if you had a puppet master in something like a Conspiracy X game, like, so somebody who's like a cancer man, right? Like you're working for the, you know, like you're working with the cancer man. Mm-hmm. But like, he's just using his people to get stuff. Like, he doesn't like dirty his hands. His people do that stuff. Like, mm-hmm. you get caught in some, you know, hick town and you get like locked up in jail. And then like all of a sudden, like some deputy like lets you out and gives you like the secret look. Right. And, like, you discover that like, oh, his contacts have set us free, kind of thing.
Oh.
It works like that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that is the first part of our segment tonight. Let's take a break and check in with the chat room. Before we do, let me tell you about Bone, Stone, and Obsidian. Jesse and Robert take monthly deep dives into the Dark Sun setting and discuss it across all editions of D&D. That's a setting that I never actually got a chance to play, but there's certain things about it that are just fascinating. One of
these I like the grittiness of it.
Yeah, there's definitely a grittiness. No question. All right, so to the chat room. We had a couple of interesting ones. First, Donnie Harville, Vampire 54, said, Puppet Master as hive mind overlap or a type of hive mind?
I think it'll depend on the nature of their power, right? So there are definitely puppet masters that could be hive minds, and then there are definitely puppet masters who are not hive minds, right? So I think we could probably do a separate opposition on the hive mind, because it bears a lot of similarities, right? Because you have it depends. So like, if you look at like the Borg, right, like the Borg queen and the, you know, and its drones, that's probably more of a puppet master, but Borgs themselves are a hive mind.
Yeah.
And then they have some of their own like super abilities because they're a hive mind, right? Like their, you know, their vast knowledge, their ability to regenerate, those kinds of things. Hive mind might be a fun opposition to do. Hive minds are terrifying, right? So, hive minds are terrifying in that lack of individuality is a thing that wigs people out.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's a thing about like the first time you see the Borg in Star Trek, right? Like, you know, they don't want to go to war with you. They want to assimilate you.
Yep. We're just going to absorb you into our collective.
Right.
That's it.
Your technological distinctiveness will add to our own.
Yes.
Right. Like that's terrifying.
So we'll pin that for later. Ding.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the Weregator asked an interesting question. I wonder if it would work to have the party all be former thralls.
Yes, because you know what the whole campaign is about then.
Yeah.
The whole campaign is the puppet master must die. Like,
yeah.
I would do that game, and I would do... So if I was going to design this game... This would be a game about a group of thralls who've shaken their control from the puppet master, who all bear terrible psychological damage for the horrible things they've done while they were a thrall, right? Like somebody, you know, took money from the bank and caused somebody, you know, like houses to be foreclosed or stuff, or, you know, somebody killed somebody. Like they're all carrying this terrible trauma. They may or may not like each other, but they're unified under like one purpose, right? Like they have shook the control and they are going to put the puppet master in the grave.
Yep.
I would totally run this game.
That's a super heavy safety tool conversation in session zero.
It's going to require some It's gonna require a lot of safety tool setup, right?
That's one of those games. That is a special group, a special table.
Yep.
That absolutely knows exactly what they're in for and mm-hmm. wants to make that experiment. I mean,
I'll do a lighter one for you, right? So if you want to do a D&D 5e one, you were all thralls of, you know, the Lich, you know. You were all thralls of the Lich and you did quote bad things, and now you've broken free of the Lich's grasp and you know where the phylactery is, right? We don't have to get into the super psychological parts of it, right? Like we can just like, you're on your quest to go kill the Lich and destroy its phylactery. If I was going to do it, I would do like that's my lighter version of it. My deeper version, right, is the emotional. The confronting the horrible things you did.
That is one of my favorite character archetypes, is the I used to be bad, now I'm good.
Yeah, the Redeemer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So absolutely. Like I would totally like, I could make both versions of that game. Like one of them could be a little lighter than the other one, and the other one could be like a really horrifically dark psychological grinder.
I get a completely different picture when I think about a Redeemer. That's
Are you thinking of Unreal Tournament Redeemer?
Things that go boom.
You know what my favorite Redeemer moment is in the original Unreal Tournament? Is when you're playing Facing Worlds and you sneak into their base and you sneak up to the top and then you fire the Redeemer out of the top of their base and arc it right back into the bottom of the base and kill everybody. It's my favorite.
Glorious.
That's my favorite up close move. But if I'm playing Facing Worlds, I'm probably sitting with a sniper rifle.
Yep.
Just picking people apart. I'm dating myself by talking this much.
That's all right. I'm with you. All right. Before we get too far into the sidebar, that is time for our part two, the round table. Mm-hmm. Everybody's favorite. The roundtable segment, which is going to start with the following question as I take a break.
Okay. The first question is, who is your favorite puppet master you have run when you have GM'd or encountered when you played? Jerry?
Oh, in my old V&V college campaign, I ended up with a puppet master that kind of evolved over time. It was Mr. Death. He was a planner without any offensive powers, just a vast intellect and technical mind. He was behind several villain groups, funding them, feeding them info, and then arranging for them to take out his opposition. When he finally did the same to the hero teams, it got to the point where my players made their own murder board, trying to figure out who this mastermind was.
Uh-oh, you named him as Mastermind.
Well, they thought he was a mastermind first. They
didn't later on.
They got it wrong the first time and took out an actual mastermind, which they didn't intend. But that actually fit his plans. They had this, I got up to go to the bathroom, I came back, they'd taken our dry erase board, they'd made this giant murder board, tracing all the things they'd found so far, traced it back to a villain who they knew about but hadn't showed up yet, took him out, and he had nothing to do with it. then they finally took him down, and he ended up in prison. And once there, he just rebuilt the largest supervillain group in the game. And after that first campaign, whenever they heard his name, you might have brought him into a revamped game world, it became a what is he up to now kind of moment. And they always assumed he was in the background doing something. If I mentioned him in the game, if I mentioned him showing up, he was always there and wasn't always successful. I mean, it was a superhero game. They were often foiling his plans and eventually capturing him and put him in prison. But it just worked very, very well. And I was really enjoying it because they were creating their own clues that didn't exist.
Yes.
And some were correct and some weren't.
It's interesting in that, some of the interesting things about the puppet master is like, if you imprison the puppet master, you probably haven't actually dealt with the problem, right? Like they almost always from in prison will like pick up their work. Mm-hmm. They're a great villain in that respect. Like, they don't even need to escape, right? They're like El Chapo. They're like, well, I'm in this prison, but like, I'm still running the whole thing from here.
Wilson Fisk.
Yes. Wilson Fisk's time in prison does not slow down the Kingpin's operation by any stretch of the imagination.
Yep.
My favorite part about that is I made a conscious effort, even at that time, to not put any red herrings in the game, and the players created their own.
Yes, the exact reason why you don't put red herrings in games.
Exactly.
Right? Like players will do this work for you.
Yes, they will. And it taught me a lot about how to do this sort of thing. So I just had a really good time running in. And when I was in college, real quick, every year we would restart the campaign. We would either move it forward a year or just scrap the entire world and start with, but it was always a new player team. And in three times, we create a brand new universe. And I would sometimes use the same villains. So whenever Mr. Death showed up, even in rumor, they just went, Puppet Master, what's he up to this time? It's a lot of fun. I like that.
Awesome.
How about you, Bob?
So there's nothing next to my name in the show notes because I was racking my brain earlier today going, Puppet Masters. I'm like, man, I can't think of one Puppet Master that, you know, that stands out to me in the moment right now. But it just occurred to me while I was in my favorite thinking place. Phil, you'll remember this. I think Ermaine the Vile from our first Amber game was a great Puppet Master player character.
He was a PC who was
a He was a PC master. Who was a Puppet Master. He had everything so under control. And none of us knew what the hell was going on until the final conflict.
He engineered the end of the universe, stole the Jewel of Judgment.
It was glorious.
He murdered several of the weaker aunts and uncles.
It was mind-blowing because none of us saw it coming.
Yes. There is a whole thesis I could unpack on everything I did wrong in that game by letting him play a PvP game while everyone else was not.
Who was the player?
Jim.
That was our friend Jim. Cool.
Nice.
Yeah. When it all came to a head in the end of the campaign, and at the end, like, there were NPCs dead, the universe was destroyed and rewritten in Jim's image. Like, it was, like, I mean, I'm not kidding. One player cried. One player to this day won't talk about it. Like, it was bad.
Yeah.
Like, there was some bad blood when it all ended. It is not, I don't know. I could unpack the cascade of things in a case study that went wrong in that game.
Yeah.
It was very much my, I'm 21. I have no idea of safety because it's 1994.
Yeah.
Everything that could go wrong.
Yeah.
From that point on.
Ultimately, now, what it boils down to is that there were, what, 6 player characters? 7?
Yes. And we were playing Amber. So granted, PvP was on the table.
Here's the thing. The lesson learned when that campaign ended was 6 people thought they were playing Amber. And one did.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, I see. And now we tried to go back and play it again.
I would. Oh, God. No,
it just didn't work. We couldn't do it.
No. Amber's a great game to play like once. And then I don't think like after you've played it once, the second time you play it, like you're too. You're too jaded to play it again.
Especially. Those
but that's an instance of a PC.
Yeah.
Mastermind, and you are not wrong, like very much a mastermind. That's a good one. My pick was from our Conspiracy X game, The Black Book. The Black Book is an organization, but it pulled a lot of strings. Like it had senators, it had law enforcement, it had military people like all up in its pockets. It had different ways to exert control or cover things up. It had aliens controlling people with mind control stuff. Like, it was busy. The Black Book was a very elaborate operation. And I noted here, it worked in a few layers, right? So, like, there was no easy way to get to the head of the Black Book. Like, you could take out agents and mid-level guys and stuff like that. But the conspiracy, it was a conspiracy that was also a puppet master. And its network had air gaps in it so that if portions of it became, exposed, that they could just burn those sections down. But it was good. And it was fun. Like, I mean, listen,
that's a game.
Puppet masters go hand in hand with conspiracies. And we haven't talked about this yet. Right. I'm going to mention this here, but I'm going to save it for a 2021 episode. We've been outlining these types of oppositions as single entities, right? Mm-hmm. It is very possible to mash these up.
Yep.
A mastermind puppet master is a possibility. A conspiracy puppet master is a possibility. We're not going to get into the mashups yet, but for the Black Book was very much a conspiracy, but was also had elements of being a puppet master inside of it as well. Cool.
All right. Question 2. What's your biggest challenge in running a puppet master or going up against a puppet master? Bob?
Yeah, so for me, as a player, I think it's not getting frustrated as you're trying to make your way through the web of clues and whatnot. Very much like mysteries, sometimes it's easy to miss the connections and you can start to get the feeling like you're not making any progress. Like, you've got a bunch of clues, and you're like, we have no idea what the hell's going on and who's pulling the strings, and it can really get frustrating. So balancing that and you know, maybe sometimes you got to ask for help, or, hey, you know, can the GM give us, like, a clue, because another hint, because, you know, something's not matching up, or what, you know, did I miss a piece? Like, I completely forgot about that third piece that actually ties it all together, and that's why I don't, you know, something like that. The balance, you gotta avoid the frustration, because nobody likes frustration.
Right.
Yeah. For me, I'll tack on to a little of that too, right? So for me as a GM, there is making sure that the puppet master isn't too perfect, right? There needs to be a way to get to the puppet master.
Yeah.
Because if they can't be found, then what is the point of, like, what's the point of this, right? Like, they need to be found at some point. So you don't want to make them so airtight that no one can find them. And you don't want to make it too easy, because otherwise the players are onto the, you know, the puppet master too early. Mm-hmm. So there's this little dance that you have to do where the early thralls don't give you enough info to make the connection all the way to the puppet master, right? Like, the early thralls are, like, more disposable, and you got to let the players rack up a few early thralls, which kind of sets in their mind, like, okay, well, these people are definitely being controlled. And then, like, they find a better thrall, and yeah, that thrall has, like, the clues,
yeah,
that, like, Bob's talking about, right? Like, there's, like, your breakthrough thrall, where you're like, aha, this thrall we have, now we understand how they're controlling people, or we've now found this carrier frequency that's being used to control people. We can start scanning the sector for that control frequency or that relay or what, like, yeah, it's those things that, like, it's the pacing of those things out. Yeah. And this is not very different from standard mystery pacing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it is, the puppet master is in some ways a mystery. And so you gotta, like, really, you gotta do a really good job of feeding the clues out at the right pace. Otherwise, it is either too slow and frustrating, or it's really quick, and then you're into the end game where they're confronting the puppet master.
Yeah.
Cool. How about you, Jer?
I have flip sides here. First, as a player going up against the puppet master, don't give in to typical player paranoia. If you're going to be in a puppet master game, it's really easy to start distrusting everybody. And right, that can disrupt the game, because it's tougher for the GM to give clues when the players simply assume that everything in the game is a misdirection. On the flip side, as a GM, you need to make certain the players understand there are people they can completely trust for the same reasons. You have to make certain the puppet master is fallible and the players have tangible victories. Otherwise, they make the scourge and give up. I've GM'd, back before I knew better, and played in campaigns where the party turned on their allies because there was too much misinformation and too many defeats in a row, and they just assumed that their allies were part of the conspiracy. And very quickly, it becomes a thing of where it's them against everybody. And yeah, as a GM, it's very tough to run that game because you can't give out, they don't trust any information they get. They slow things down and they let their paranoia build up. And as a player, you get to the point where you don't feel like you're ever accomplishing anything because you feel that no matter what, it's going to happen. I've been in a game where the players literally discussed just joining the puppet master. Like, he's obviously got his stuff. He's got his stuff together. Nobody around us does. And it doesn't seem like anybody's on our side. We may as well side with the guy who's got his stuff together. He seems at least to be paying his people.
Yeah.
And that should be a sign to the GM that things need to change.
Yeah.
That's usually the passive aggressive frustration.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's usually the manifestation of that passive aggressive frustration.
Yep. Yeah, that gets messy.
Yep. All right.
Okay. Question number three, the new favorite. What is your secret sauce for running a puppet master?
Yeah, for me, the puppet, I like the network, right? I want the network to be operating in plain sight. I want everything to look like one thing, but it's doing something, like the puppet master has subverted it for their own needs. Like, if the puppet master needs money laundering, like, it's not a bank he subverts, it's a charity. And if he wants surveillance, it's not like he takes over like traffic cameras or something like that. He subverts like Amazon drivers, mm-hmm. right? Because Amazon drivers are everywhere, and yep. now you don't even notice them, yep. right? Like you don't even think twice if you see an Amazon truck parked on your block, right? You're just yeah. like, oh yeah, the Amazon guy's here, right? Like, so it like. It's like I like I really like heterogeneous networks. I like my puppet master to kind of be like, okay, I need these things, so I need to control these things in order to get access to them. But then I want those things to be really oblique. Like I don't like if I take over a police station, like it's very telling about the puppet master. But if I take over a whole bunch of Amazon drivers. Like I can do a lot with Amazon drivers. I can surveil things. I can move things all around the city, right? Like
yep.
I could move packages and people wherever the hell I want.
There's your transportation and distribution network.
Yep.
Oh, absolutely. Right. Like things appear and disappear all over the city. And no one's the wiser.
Yep.
Yeah. So like my secret sauce is really in, filling out that network. And I really dig it, right? Like I really like, coming up with all of those kind of weird pieces and then letting the players find them all. Right. So like, I really want that. Like if I've come up with the Amazon, driver thing, then I want you to find the Amazon drivers. Mm-hmm. Right. Cause that moment where you're like, wait, oh no. This Amazon driver is not just an Amazon driver.
Surprise.
How many more, right? Like, and that's the, like, that leads you to the thing. I like this.
I mean, not that we are specifically implying that Jeff Bezos is a supervillain level mastermind puppet master. We're just not discounting
it at this point. But he is. But I'm also saying, consider yeah. that in the past, like, year or two, how casual you have become to Amazon trucks in your environment. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't think twice of an Amazon person walking up to your house.
And how much they're allowed in places that other things aren't.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
Take any street that has restricted parking, and how often do you see an Amazon truck blocking away and nobody thinks it's open, they're just there
yeah.
for a couple of minutes while something's going on. Yep.
I tell you what I don't Perfect. Like. Did you see the commercial for the new thing that they're gonna do? You give Amazon not. Access to your garage. They can open up your garage, put the package inside the garage, and close the garage again.
No. I mean, I have a detached garage. Wouldn't be the worst thing.
I'm yeah. like, I don't want them. I don't, like, no.
I mean, it's like the thing where they had, like, Walmart was going to come in your house and put your groceries in the house. Like,
yeah, no.
The yeah, locker no. thing in front of your house. Like, if you need
yeah.
to.
Yeah.
If you need to secure your stuff,
I have a deck
like,
box on
not,
my
I'm
porch.
Not inviting
you can put it in yeah, I mean, I don't have Amazon drivers that can read delivery instructions properly. I don't want them going anywhere in my garage. We've had some things. So
I understand the need for it.
Yeah,
yeah.
All right.
So for my secret sauce, a couple of things. First thing, real quick. I always try to make sure I've got lots of colorful henchmen and minions because. The Puppet Master's plot is going to take a while. And so to reveal itself, give the players colorful enemies to interact with and then defeat. It's okay to defeat, you know, thug number six. But if they defeat, you know, Abigail's, you know, large henchman who, you know, likes to throw his cowboy hat at people, then that's like something that's more colorful. The players get something out of it more than just we defeated somebody. Number two is I try to make sure that I hand out information in a timely manner. Keep the master hidden, but give the players hints that something bigger is going on and let them discover and then thwart some of that. Don't let them wait forever to start putting the pieces together. And if they start actively looking for it, keep giving them some tidbits. And lastly, and this is just one of my things, I love to have the negotiation scene. If possible, try to have at least one scene where the heroes and the puppet master even encounter each other before the final battle. Then they can discuss the situation. Maybe he makes an offer to the heroes. One that's always too distasteful to accept, of course. This will give the GM a chance to, you know, kind of play up their Dr. Doom a little bit. It gives the players a chance to explore and reveal plans and also taunt the puppet master. There's nothing more fun for me when I'm GMing when they get a chance to probably talk to them. You know, they're in that CD bar where neither of them can make an overt attack. At least the puppet master doesn't think it's worth, like, bringing down the bar just to take out the players. And the players are there. And they get to reveal that one little nugget of knowledge that the puppet master doesn't know they have. and they get to catch that puppet master in a thing and watch them just briefly let their guard down. The players love it, and I like that scene where they get to have that face to face. You know, might even be mid season sort of thing,
or one where they shake the puppet master's power, like the puppet master goes to control him, and they're like, "Yeah, not so much," right? And now the puppet master's like, "Oh shit!" Like they've blocked my mind control, Ray. They're a way bigger threat than I thought they were.
Yep.
Again, it is all about taking the puppet master down.
Yep. All right. So that was our look at the puppet master.
We hope next time that you want to put one in your game, that some of this information will be of help.
And now one more trip back to the chat room for life, and then we'll head over to the conversation corner. So chat room.
Chat room, chat room, chat room.
Chromatic Chameleon had a game where the traveler head of scouts for the Five Sisters subsector was the puppet master. Kept the characters off balance until the end when she barely escaped, but they spoiled an early start to the Fifth Frontier War.
Yeah,
Absolutely.
Misdirected Mark, word scramble.
I like that because that's a way of using the puppet master as a way to actually influence something that's going on in the game. The Fifth Frontier War is a major turning point for Traveler. I'm pretty sure it's when you went from Mega Traveler to the next edition, and being able to stop that early would be a major feather in the cap of experienced Traveler players. It's pretty cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
Gator was asking me what game I would plan out this Thrall game for, and I'm trying to think of a game that would really handle. So if I'm designing it, right, or if I'm just thinking about it, I want something that handles having trauma, but also overcoming it, right? So part of the game has to be about kind of like either you're making amends to the things you did, or you're, you know, your revenge is going to, you know, hopefully bring you peace, or maybe it won't, and you plan to go out in a blaze of glory kind of thing. I'll tell you what I think might be a fun, I don't know if it would work mechanically. I was thinking it'd be a fun kind of variant of the Mountain Witch.
I was just thinking the same thing.
You're all still trying to figure out if you can trust each other.
Yeah.
Right? But, like, at the same time, like, you know, will one of you fall again for the, for the witch's, you know, powers? And maybe that's a card you hand out so that some players... maybe you hand it out and you don't let the players look until the end to, like, find out that not all of them can actually resist the witch again. And, like, finally, when you flip it over, you're like, oh, fuck, I have to betray everyone. Again, a game fraught with safety issues. Not that I'm saying you can't play it. I'm saying it's a game that it is one that you think your way through and then you plan out the safety
tread
accordingly.
Carefully is...
This is less of like I'm gonna wing it, and more of a I need to give this game a little thought. One could do it with one could do it in Fate, because you could do you could mess with the aspect system a little and do like multiple trouble aspects, and that you're trying to get rid of them, you know, like off your sheet and replace them with other aspects. If I'm doing this as a one shot. Then I'm not really worried about healing these things.
Yeah.
I'm just going to give you your trouble aspects and set you loose to kill the puppet master. If I'm doing this as a arc, or if I'm doing this as a campaign, then I want to have a whole thing about as you're working your way up to finding the puppet master, you are dealing with making amends for the things that you did as a thrall. Right now, this is like very much a HBO like series. Right, like, yeah. I could easily spin this thing out into an HBO series with that kind of look.
All right. Okay. That brings us to the Conversation Corner.
Yay. I haven't heard that sound in so long.
That's fun. All right. So, I personally, I believe I stated last week, back into another Minecraft solo game. I did a lot of work on a a very aesthetically pleasing base that I'm very happy with how it came out. I was so happy with how it came out.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
While I was building it, I built myself a platform. I nerd hopped up on a bunch of cobble and then stood in the same spot and periodically took screen grabs of my progress as I was building it so that you could see the progress as it went through. And then I made an animated GIF out of it. I said GIF. Fight me. I'm very pleased with how it came up. It still needs some landscaping around the outside. I'm just getting started on the machine room to start doing some ore processing and different stuff like that. Something that I have never actually done because most of the Minecraft servers that I've played on with other people, someone else put together like the mechanism like four times or double or quadrupling process and stuff, and I just used their stuff because it was communal. So I've never actually done that myself. So now I'm gonna sit down and for the first time ever, I'm gonna do my own setup of multiplying my ore, processing, and doing stuff like that.
I will tell you, as the man who built the Tower of Mech, the five times ore processing is a behemoth.
I don't know if I'm going to go to five, but I'm definitely going to do like three or four.
Three is relatively easy and easy to keep up with.
Yeah.
Four requires just a little more staging. Five is a monster. I was happy to do it, but like I said, if you remember, I built a 9-floor building.
Yep.
With two adjacent like chunks to also house stuff. I'm pretty sure that I crashed that server.
You definitely put a strain on it. There's no question about that.
I'm pretty sure the Tower of Mech was. But it was fun. Like, it's a lot of parts. The 4X is enough parts. The 5X is a ridiculous number of parts, including like salinization towers and things like that that you have to build. And,
yeah, it's wacky. I got to get some actual power, though. Because right now, the only power I have to get some proper power going, because right now the only power I've got is two furnaces. One is the Stirling generator, and one is like a furnace that you can just throw wood in to create power.
Not to get too Minecrafty, but I'm going to tell you that the fastest, the best, relatively cheap generator, as long as you have some gold, is the mech windmill.
Oh yeah, the mechanism windmills are glorious.
You start making mechanism windmills and. You can stay on that until you do ethylene, mechanism ethylene power.
I was toying with the idea of doing some immersive engineering and doing a water wheel underground in my base just to do something different.
That fucking water wheel is a giant pain in the ass for how much RF you get out of it.
It is. Giant. You have to have the water pouring just right over it for it to be at its optimal efficiency.
The water wheel was how I powered everything. Like the first three seasons you were doing this, it's all I could figure out how to do.
Yeah.
I gotta make some fucking windmills, man. Next game, I'll teach you guys the entry tier of mech. I'll teach it to you, Jer. I'll teach you the entry tier of mech. It will hold you up for like two thirds of the game.
It'll be enough for Jerry because Jerry doesn't get deep enough into the stuff that requires as much power as the rest of us.
A couple of windmills put up on a platform. You'd be good for a long time, and that's energy. That's renewable energy. You don't have to burn any material.
Nope.
Well, I was doing windmills last season. I was actually carrying them around with me and setting them up wherever I was.
Yep.
Because remember, I was dropping those teleporters. But the first two seasons, remember, I had the water wheel underground.
Oh, yep. I did too. I tried building one of those fucking water wheels.
I had three water wheels in a row because it actually started because I had a leak in my roof and had water pouring into my base. I stuck a water wheel under it. And that's what did it.
There you go.
So
it's, making the best of a bad situation.
That's what you gotta do.
So that's taking some time. We probably should start having a conversation about season six, though.
I think so.
Looking forward to the awesome watch party coming up tonight. That's gonna be so much fun.
I'm so excited for tonight's episode.
Very excited.
I'm happy. One of my favorite episodes.
Yep.
It is one of the best episodes in the series.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And then the last thing, I recently got a new phone, which I mentioned before. With a new phone always comes a new phone case, especially yes. when it's a different form factor of a phone that won't fit in the old case. Because every time they make a new phone, they make it different. So you can't use the old case and you have, you know, they're all in cahoots, you know, it's a conspiracy. But every time I get a new phone, I never get the right case on the first try.
No,
I always get two or more cases. So I'm like, oh, this one looks like it'll be good. Because I like to get a case that's a kind of like hardened, like military grade type, you know, like something that like if I drop it, it's going to survive. So I go for something like that. And I like to have a kickstand so that I can pop the kickstand out and stand it up. Or if I can use the kickstand to help hold it with one hand sometimes. So I always go looking for that. And the one that I had on my Galaxy S10 was really nice and I liked it. OtterBox Senda says is the shit. Unfortunately, OtterBox is not the shit for all of the features. For a strong, durable, good protection of the phone, yes. But for a kickstand, no. They do not do kickstands very often. And if they do, it's like belt clip stuff and shit like that. That I don't. I just want something that's built into the case.
What about a pop socket that you can just stick on the back that'll hold it? That's how I use mine all the time, like that.
My
pop socket is literally a kickstand.
Yeah, I'm not fond of that. It doesn't.
Okay.
Like the kickstands that I get, you can stand it up vertically or you can stand it up on the side. You can go either way, okay. So you can go portrait or landscape. Yep. But anyhow, long story short, the case that I had for my S10, I really liked. That company did not make the same case for the S20 FE 5G. I got the corner case of the S20s, apparently. There's like three different versions and they're all different sizes. And it's like, what? I don't understand.
Oh, that's no good.
So I bought one and it turned out the kickstand was shit. And it was real wobbly and I was like, eh. And the screen protector was kind of shitty. So then I found another one and that arrived today and I put it on and I'm like, perfect, glorious. I like it. So it always takes me at least two tries to get a new phone case.
You should just order two cases and immediately return the one you don't like.
But you see, I don't know if the first one's going to suck.
But it's never been the first one.
But if they both come in at the same time, they're both the first one.
Oh, no.
So.
I see where this is falling apart.
All right. But that's me. So, Jerry, what about you?
All right. For me, obviously, Dungeons 3. I spent a lot of time with that. Doing a lot of Lego therapy. I got another order in from of a knockoff brand that had just tons and tons of food trucks and things like that. Little sets that have like 100 pieces, so they're easy to put together while watching a TV show. It's very relaxing for me. I've got a whole table of them sitting behind me here. I've been prepping for a week and a half off, so I'm getting some stuff together. We've been kind of lining up some shows to watch and food and everything here. The big thing for me, I went back and watched some of the Star Trek episodes from a couple weeks ago that weren't in our rotation or were part of the skipped episodes and saw both the Muse and the Quickening. They were both really good episodes. The Muse is a Odo and Troy episode with a kind of low B plot with Jake. But it's a really good episode that shows a lot of Odo's growth.
Yeah.
And then the Quickening is a really good Bashir Dax episode. It's a science episode. It's very gut punchy. It would make a great adventure of the week for a sci-fi game. But just really well done. And also, kind of makes me think that that Bashir is not going to be very nice to Jem'Hadar he meets in the future. I'm waiting for him to go off on one of them at some point.
As much as Julian can go off on something.
Hey, don't mess with the doctor. That is caught up on a bunch of shows. I finally caught up with the last season of Archer. I'm into season 3 of Rebels. And lastly, we got to play Band of Blades again last week, which was a lot of fun.
Yep.
I'm enjoying Band of Blades. It was important for me because all the other gaming last week got canceled for different reasons. It was the only game I played last week. I'm really liking the way Band of Blades handles the Forge in the Dark engine. I think it's a little better than some of the other ones I've played. And I like the subsystems, the managing of the different teams. It was kind of neat because we've been developing, you get six squads of troops you have to try to keep alive. And one of the characters, the Marshal, designs the basics of those troops, and the players, as they start playing, the characters fill in. So I gave them all like a one sentence description of the five characters. And then, Bob and Gator took two of them and just fleshed them out into full fledged characters. It's a lot of fun to see, that sort of thing. And we're going to end up with our four main characters, our four officers, and hopefully, 60 fleshed out NPCs that we're going to be playing from time to time. And for me, as both a player and GM, I just love that. I love playing that kind of thing.
It's it's a really interesting take on the troop style campaign.
Yep. I love playing multiple characters anyway, so this is a chance to kind of jump in and out of different things. And Chris, as the GM, you know, you're running two player characters, and then there are going to be two players are playing two of the five NPCs. And even though we only developed two of the five NPCs, Chris just let us jump into all the rest of them as we were playing. So you'd be playing your character. If your character's not there, but somebody else is there, you'd take over that character and run them for a little while. So it gave you a chance to play more than one archetype. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. If you like very gritty, dark fantasy games, I would recommend Band of Blades with the right group of players. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So, all right. So those are mine. How about you, Phil?
Yeah, I wound up only getting one game in last week. My Numenera game got canceled. My DCC game turned out to just be everybody hanging out. So we played some Forbidden Lands. It was kind of an exploring and exposition episode. It did run into this issue of what to do when none of your information is perfect, which is the topic of my next Gnome Stew article that's coming out this week. But we ran into this moment in the game where the players can't figure out who's telling. They can't tell if somebody's lying. They can't tell if both sides are telling most of the truth or whatever. And they're kind of stuck in the middle right now, trying to figure out like what to do in order to solve the predicament they're in, which is kind of amusing.
Yeah.
But it did bring up this. This idea of, from a game mastering perspective, what do you do when your players kind of stall out, when they run out of information? Like, how do you kind of gently nudge things? Or if not nudge, how do you just kind of keep the game flowing rather than bogging down and out? So, you know, it got me thinking about that. I still don't know if I know what the players are going to do. I'm not sure they know exactly what they're going to do yet to solve this problem.
I know what I want to do.
Yeah, so that was good. And then I've got, what do I got this week? I got some Numenera coming up this week. I'm really looking forward to playing. We're in the middle of a really good adventure. We hit like a really good, cliffhanger last time where they activated this, this artifact and then everybody passed out. So we're going to find out what happens when they wake up. But in addition to that, I've been watching Voyager. I got to say, I've hit a, stretch of season five that has been fairly lackluster. I had one, I think the week before that was like super good. And these last couple that have kind of gone by, I've been like, man, I'm not putting these on the list. Like, I'm not like, these aren't so far. These haven't been very interesting. But I'm hopeful that it'll perk up again. That tends to happen with Voyager. There tends to be it bookends really strong. There's almost always something in the middle, and then in the in between, the beginning and the middle, and the middle and the end of the season, the episodes fluctuate. Did some more cooking. I have over the past couple of months have been working and reworking this recipe for this. Everything bagel breakfast casserole. And I have pretty much gotten it down now. Like it is pretty reliable for me to make it. It is delicious. You know, I like to do these Sunday things where I cook brunches, for myself, because I like to just make fun things on Sundays. I've been playing more Minecraft. I started up a solo instance. I don't think my base is nearly as luxurious as Bob's. But I spent, I spent like a day looking for sulfur, and then Bob reminded me I could just pulverize coal. And I swear to God, the first piece of coal I put into a pulverizer kicked out a piece of sulfur, and I was like, son of a bitch. But having traveled all around the game world looking for sources of sulfur, I found like a whole bunch of good stuff. So I kind of filled up a bunch of crates and stuff with goodies. But now I have I made a battery, so I can now go mining, power mining in the mining dimension. So my my game should take a quick jump upward, as I'm now going to be able to power mine and gain a lot of resources quickly. Been, as I said at the top of the show, been reading a lot of Cyberpunk Red. Ordered a box of pretzels.
Yeah,
nice.
Because I'm taking a week off from work next week. I figured out I had half the week off anyway. And I was like, well, shit, if I just like burn 2 days, I can take the whole week off. And sadly, we're not going to my parents' house due to the Rona. Oh. So I was like, which sucks because I love going to my mom's, and I love going to my mom's for Thanksgiving because it's like her favorite holiday. And we usually go
Thanksgiving at your mom's is glorious.
It is a pretty fun. It is a pretty fun and delicious time. But then I also thought about it, and I'm like, I'm also not going to be driving for 12 hours this week.
Yeah.
Like 6 hours there and 6 hours back. So then I was like, you know, if I take those 2 days, I am off starting on Friday on the 20th, at the end of the day on the 20th, and I don't go back to work till the 30th. And I was like, oh, that sounds like, considering I've only taken 7 whole vacation days this year, I was like, oh, 9 days off for 2 days of vacation. I was like, mm-hmm. That's a deal. That's a deal. So I already cleared my entire calendar next week. It is the first time I have looked at my calendar in, I don't know, a year or two and seen the entire week off, devoid of any meetings whatsoever. So anyway, I just have to make it through Wednesday. Tomorrow I have meetings nonstop from 9 a.m. till 3 p.m. I have to make it through Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then I'm on vacation. Okay. So I ordered pretzels.
Yes.
And I ordered the Maui onion mustard just to try it.
Yeah, let us know how it is.
I will. I'm very excited. My pretzels should be in the next day or two. Mm-hmm. So those are always delicious. Like that's never a, ordering pretzels is never a bad idea. Nope. And I know, cause I hooked you guys on them too.
I'll be having one before the show, before the watch. Me too.
Our new freezer is on its way. There's going to be we'll be stocking up just on pretzels on like half a shelf eventually.
You know, in January.
Yeah.
In January, we should see if we couldn't, should be able to do a promotion for these guys.
Yeah.
You're like, we would happily promote you on our podcast and eat some pretzels during an episode.
Yeah.
Like,
we would highlight the various types and the sauce.
The flavors and the sauces. Like, I feel like that should, maybe I'll tweet them. Like,
yep. That would be simple enough.
Yeah.
That would be. They are really good pretzels. Like
really,
I wasn't lying when I was like, oh, you guys should get these pretzels. I'm kind of excited for Cyberpunk. I don't know where it's going to fit in my, in the map of all my gaming stuff, but, I could use a little retro right now. Right. Like, I mean, this year has not been stellar. I could use something that, you know, gives me some old school or, you know, some past 90s, 80s, 90s vibes. Mm-hmm. I could totally be down with something like that. So anyway, that's pretty much me.
All right, then. That brings us to the Patreon shout outs. Oops. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you for being our patrons. Jim Fitzpatrick, Joseph Peralta, Carl Halperin, Merrick Blackman, Mike Amer, My Brett, Ninjabi, our very own Rainmaker, Richard Ruane, and Rory McLeod. Thank you. And thanks to everyone for listening tonight.
If you are free in a few weeks, if you are free on December 29th, at 8 p.m. Eastern, and then Tuesdays following that, 8 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. the Queen's time. You're welcome. Come join us live on Twitch, where you can chat with other listeners in the awesome chat room for life and ask us the occasional question.
If you can't make the live show, check out our podcast each week, wherever you get your podcasts. And take a listen to the other shows in the Mr. Eckermark Network, such as Down with D&D, Bone Sword Obsidian, the FM Gamers, Panda's Talking Games, The Gnome Cast, John Kuhussle, She's a Super Geek, Bonus Experience, and The Lounge. We got to add The Lounge in that list. You can and should also check out our sibling podcast, Tabletop Bellhop, The Knights of the Night, and the always amazing Gaming and BS.
After you have discovered how to thwart the control of the Puppet Master, and before you start priming all of that dynamite, leave us some feedback. You can reach us on the old-fashioned emails, mmp@misdirectedmark.com. You can find us on the now-defunct Google Wave, and you can find us on Twitter. The show and the network is at misdirectedmark. He is Robert M. Everson. He is GM Gerrymander, and I am DNA Phil.
You had to go to Wave. Too soon, man. Too soon. My heart still bleeds for Google.
I'll pour out some coffee for Wave, man.
Oh, man. Hey, if you like what we do here and on the other shows in the Misdirected Mark Network, you can support our Patreon campaigns. MMP, Down with D&D, and Pandas Talking Games are at patreon.com/MMP. She's a Super Geek is still at patreon.com/SassGeek, but they're sadly going away. Zhanghu Hustle is at patreon.com/Zhanghu Hustle, and Bonus Experience is at patreon.com/Bonus Experience. Patrons of MMP, Down with D&D, and Pandas Talking Games get access to the after show, pre-production show notes, musical parodies, the Pandas Talking Games bonus outtakes, and other special releases.
This has been a Misdirected Mark production, the media arm of Encoded Designs. Mic drop.
Wear a mask, stay home, be safe. We out.